This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. I'd like to thank our sponsors who make our podcast possible. We tape our podcast with the ongoing support of Raider and Jason Sikora, our sound engineer. Raider is a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. Iberia Bank and First Horizon, who are now one bank. Two relationship-driven banks, both leaders in the industry, have officially joined forces. The combination of Iberia Bank and First Horizon creates a leading financial services company dedicated to enriching the lives of their clients, associates, and their communities. I'd also like to thank Lafayette General Health, who has joined the Ochsner Health family and is now Ochsner Lafayette General. As one health system, Ochsner Lafayette General will provide expanded services and enhanced care from the familiar faces you already trust. Ochsner Lafayette General means more resources to help solve healthcare's toughest problems, reinvesting in our communities, and being further committed to health and wellness. Ochsner Lafayette General. Together means more. Learn more today at togethermeansmore.org. Lafayette City Police Chief Thomas Lee Glover Sr. is our guest. Chief Glover previously worked with the Dallas Police Department for 36 years in various capacities, including deputy chief on an interim basis. He served as president of the Black Police Association of Greater Dallas. A native of Tallulah, Louisiana, Chief Glover earned a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from Grambling State University. He holds certifications as a master peace officer, as well as an expert domestic violence, critical incident response, national incident management systems, and combating surviving terrorism. Chief Glover joined our community at the close of 2020. We're honored to have him share his experience and heart for policing with us. Welcome to Discover Lafayette, Chief.
Thank you. Good morning, and good morning to all of your listeners.
Yes, I'm thrilled to be here so quickly after you joined us in our community. I had the pleasure of meeting you at the Southside Community Relations Committee, and I saw the effort that are being made to not only work with the community, but to partner with other law enforcement professionals, such as Marshal Reggie Thomas, representatives from the Sheriff's Department, and so on. So I'm looking forward to hearing your story. What made you apply for the job to come to Lafayette?
Well, number one, I've always had a love for law enforcement. Louisiana is my home state. The only place that I've applied for a job since I retired from active duty as a Dallas police officer was in the state of Louisiana. I have maternal roots to southern Louisiana, although I was born and reared in the northern part of the state. But Lafayette presents itself as a special place for policing. It's a very good department. There are a lot of positive things that are going on here. And there are some challenges, particularly from a standpoint of culture, that we have to amend, we have to enhance, and we have to make sure that the Lafayette Police Department is moving into the 21st century. And I actually had a discussion with a former chief in Dallas who actually talked to me first about the city of Lafayette and the Lafayette Police Department and sort of instilled in me that I would be a good fit for it. At first, I didn't know whether I was going to do it. So I started looking into it. I started reading the history. I started studying Lafayette. I liked the climate. I liked the opportunity for educational enhancement. So all of those things about the community attracted me, the availance and abundance of health care here, the different cultures. All of those things are very attractive. But one of the most prolific reasons that I wanted to do this is that I thought I could make a difference in what Lafayette was going through. I came from a department that mirrored what Lafayette is going through some 25, 30 years ago starting in the mid to the late 80s, mm-hmm. we had the same issues on the table. And my previous history, I was a part of a police association that worked very hard at trying to bridge that gap mm-hmm. and mend the tears and the wounds in the community. And Lafayette presented itself as somewhere where I could go in and make a mm-hmm. difference. And that's why I chose to apply for this job. And I'm very honored to be selected. It is honor of a lifetime. I say every day I'm thankful to Mayor President Guillory for having the, you know, the goodness to employ somebody like me as his police chief, his first mm-hmm. choice as police chief. And so I'm very thankful for that.
There's so much here, I guess, to talk about. When I think about Dallas, it's such a larger metropolitan area. And I typically think of there being a larger population of maybe Hispanic people. And I don't know if back in the 80s, when you're talking about it, was it mainly the same problems we're having here? Was it minorities overall that were being maybe mistreated?
Well, a lot of it had to do with use of force, but it was mm-hmm. spread across the community as a whole. Mm-hmm. We had outside consultants to come in and review the police department from top to bottom, and they made recommendations to mm-hmm. the city leaders. And you had a disproportionate number of people of color, black and Hispanic, being the subject of encounters with police officers mm-hmm. that ended in the use of force or the use of deadly force. And the consultant's study showed that, and we had to mend a lot of fences. We had to change our curriculum. We had to review and amend the deadly force and the use of force mm-hmm. policy. We began to see the importance of getting the community involved in law enforcement. And please don't get me wrong, Dallas had these issues years ago, but they still mm-hmm. have these same issues. And so they're working on a daily basis to try and implement programs similar to some things that I want to do here in Lafayette to help us move forward.
So you spent your career up to this point has been in Dallas. You went straight there out of school. Yes. And made that your home for 36 years, it looks like.
Yes, I have, in 3 months, I'll have 40 years in law enforcement mm-hmm. without a break. I served as a full-time paid Dallas police officer for 36 and a half years. And I left on one day, and less than 24 hours later, I showed back up as a reserve doing some of the same things I did as a full-time officer. And I just resigned as a reserve 12 days ago.
Oh.
So my entire career, almost 40 years in about 3 months, has been spent mm-hmm. In law enforcement with one agency.
Right.
And I've enjoyed it.
Chief, when I was doing a little research on you, you know, thank goodness for Google and the internet, but I was really, really pleased to see the amount of effort that you made in Dallas, because I know you're going to bring that same personality here, but to reach out to the community. I know that you started you had a radio call-in show where people could talk. You encouraged the community to reach out to you and the police department. I'm assuming that was all a part of the change of culture in Dallas, and it was also, some of it was a result of the death of some police officers in Dallas.
Yeah, in the mid to late 80s, the police department was going through some very critical issues. A local radio station, KHVN Heaven 97, which is a religious station, mm-hmm. one of their news anchors approached the leadership of our association and, you know, put out the idea of us having a radio show. Mm-hmm. Of course, he was the anchor. He was responsible for spearheading the show. And our leadership in the association would show up every Friday afternoon, and we would take calls for 1 hour from the community. And the radio show was called Law Enforcement, A Call to Action. Mm-hmm. And it was most popular during the times when we were facing the aftermath of very critical issues in our community. Oftentimes, it would have been the use of deadly force by a Dallas police officer, in some instances, where Dallas officers lost their lives or were severely injured. And we think that this show went a long way in having people to build trust. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we used it for is if a person had a complaint about a particular police department issue, we would take the complaint directly off the radio and go back to internal affairs or to the appropriate command level officer in the police department and say, this needs to be looked into. And we were very successful in that. And I think it is something that I know for a fact works in the community.
Right. Did the Dallas Police Department mirror the population of Dallas? I know here they've been working to raise the number of minority hires. Did Dallas go through that also? Did they mirror the population?
The first 7 years of my career did not. In 1988, 89, the police department and the city of Dallas instituted measures to where they started to actively recruit for officers of color. Mm-hmm. The city of Dallas was 25% African American, and the police department was well below that. After our efforts were expended at recruiting at some of the historically black colleges and universities, or what we called Hispanic serving institutions around the country, mm-hmm. we were able to increase the representation up to that 22, 24, 25% level. Uh-huh. And Dallas, at its height, had almost 4,000 officers.
Wow.
And at the height for officers of color, we had almost 1,000 of those were African American, and mm-hmm. I believe around 600 or 700 were Spanish. But the population itself is right now in the last few years, and it'll probably come out in the most recent census, it's predominantly Hispanic in terms of the city limits itself. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How many police officers do we have here in our police force in the city of Lafayette?
We are budgeted for 289 sworn officers and about 40 non-sworn support civilian personnel. Right now, we are a few short. I think we have today, as we speak, about 284, 285.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't realize how many. I know I've read about this. We have about 132,000 people, I guess, in the city, which I didn't realize how many we had. And I know that you're really wanting to encourage community involvement so that your police officers can police and do their jobs, but we can do a lot as citizens and residents to help you guys. If you want to talk about your thoughts on that, about getting more community engagement.
Well, a lot of people look at community policing as an idea or a theory that hasn't really been tested, but it has been tested. I've seen it work. And community policing simply means that members in the community, the clergy, business people, the legal community, the educational community, get together and partner with the police department on solving crime and taking care of the social ills. They don't get behind the police department. They don't get in front. They get beside. And I look at crime as a big elephant in the room, mm-hmm. and the community is out front, and the police department is right beside them. The most successful ways to reduce crime in any community is to have as many eyes as possible. Mm-hmm. I just mentioned about 280-something police officers. I would rather have 132,000 people, 140,000 people mm-hmm. with their eyes on the community than just 286. So that's the essence. And the Lafayette Police Department over the upcoming future will implement community policing from the top down. Me as the chief, the captains, the majors, the lieutenants, the sergeants, senior corporals and corporals will be required to do at least one community event per week.
Oh.
And they're going to be evaluated on. It's going to be a part of their performance mm-hmm. Appraisal. And a community event could be going to a Girl Scout meeting and speaking, or stopping by a school to mentor young kids, or going to your local church, or producing a crime watch group. So that's what we're going to start with, but eventually that's going to grow. I do have plans to have a particular set of officers to address social ills mm-hmm. in the community that manifest themselves later on. in calls for police services. We can reduce the calls for police services by taking care of some of those social ills, like trash not being put up, or a dilapidated or vacant, broken down home not boarded up or cared for, some of the code enforcement violations that we rely on the citizens to do. This group will be responsible for locating social ills all over this city, and we'll address them with the appropriate personnel. We'll need some private groups like Catholic Charities and the religious organizations and social organizations to help us. But the goal of community policing is to reduce crime in the city, but it also reduces the total number of calls that come into our 911 center. I look at it, I always use the analogy of a yard with a lot of weeds in it, and you call in your lawn person every week to cut the weeds down, but they grow back. Community policing would be you call in that lawn person and they treat the yard with weed preventer, and you only need the police or you only need the yard guy once every other season. If community policing works like it's designed, the same thing would be with the demand for police services. Neighborhoods that traditionally have been on the low end of receiving police services would no longer need services because the things that created that need would have been identified and eliminated.
And then people just, I mean, it's part and parcel with this. They feel that they matter when they see that the police is their partner and not out just to arrest them for something. I read with interest, and I don't know if it was accurate, it was a news report, but that the SWAT team that you guys have, you want to look at identifying things in the community, as you're talking about, before they're a problem, trying to learn more about what's going on, and not just for a crisis, but for these type of things. So you can maybe, I guess, do some upstream thinking. You can prevent problems before they occur. So this is wonderful. And I think that's why it's so important. I want to encourage people, if we can on this podcast, to get more involved with your community relations committees and any way that they can get involved to help the police.
So, thank you.
Yeah. And Chief, I'd like to take a break for a second. I want to let people hear a little snippet of my interview from last year when Marshal Reggie Thomas was running. He was speaking about a run-in that he had with the law when he was actually a law enforcement officer and got stopped. And it's unfortunately a typical issue that's happened. And I know that you're working on too to prevent this.
Started off in narcotics because I was from New Orleans, so they wanted me to buy drugs because I fit that kind of, you know, I can talk the talk and stuff like that. So I was in narcotics for a little while.
That was like undercover work?
Yes, I did some undercover work.
Was that interesting or?
It was interesting.
It was dangerous.
It was very dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, it was a situation. And my worst case scenario, that brings me to my worst case scenario, dealing with a police officer. I went buy drugs, and you have to realize to go buy drugs. I don't even know what city made it. Patterson. I don't even know where I was coming from, but we went up there. Different cities call for an undercover officer, and they want you to come and they want you to buy drugs. So we go to.
Oh, you like trade out?
Yes.
Like, so people don't know your face.
That's it.
In the community.
That's it.
Okay.
So I go there. I do my job. I buy drugs. Had a good time. I'm coming back.
Only because it's your job. Then.
Yes, yeah. Only my job. I'm coming back in a car. You know, the car old, and I'm driving really, probably fast on the interstate coming.
Oh, no.
And I get stopped by a state trooper.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I didn't have the drugs in the car,
good.
But I did have a gun on my side.
Oh, my
so
God.
I get stopped. So the state trooper does not give me a chance to say anything. He don't do it. He put your hands on the hood. The hood was hot. I never forget it.
Did you have your badge?
Yes.
You did.
But he didn't give me a chance to do
nothing.
And
you don't want to be putting your hand in your
exactly.
Pockets.
I wasn't going to touch
mm-hmm.
my gun.
Mm-mm.
So he put my hand on the car, and the car was hot. And you know, I was a police officer coming still on duty, and I never was more scared in all my life. I mean, he was just like fear. I mean, he was over me like I have never, and I'm thinking to myself after that, and I still think back on that, that I was legal as a police. Imagine if I was not.
I know.
You know.
Welcome back to Discover Lafayette with Chief Thomas Glover. So, Chief, I'm trying to think how to ask this. Maybe I'll set it up with my own experiences. Whenever I see the police, I live in an all-white neighborhood. I'm always so happy to see the police. If they're there, I figure there's a reason for it. And even if they don't have a reason, they're just patrolling. But I know that that's not how everybody feels, and that's why you're working on community policing. When I interviewed Reggie Thomas, he talked about a few times he had been roughed up by police officers that didn't respect him as a fellow police officer. And I know I had read online that you also had some experiences being stopped, and perhaps with no cause. Does that experience as an African American, do you bring that? Is that why it's important for our police force to mirror our population so that there's empathy and understanding?
That's one of the things that will take place in situations like that. But I do believe that regardless of what community you make up, if you're African American, Hispanic, Asian, Caucasian, Mid-Eastern, whatever the community you are a part of, you should be treated with dignity. And the number one most important thing about community policing is building trust, working with people, and most important of that tenet is treating people with dignity. When you treat people with dignity, regardless of who they are, you can build trust. And when you build trust, you become a legitimate police officer in the minds of everyone. And you will not have situations where people feel that the color of the day is rudeness, that if an officer stops me, they are not going to hear my side before he or she acts rudely with me. So that is really important, making sure that dignity is from the top down. Mm-hmm. I respect all employees of the police department, whether they are sworn or civilian employees. I respect the members of this community. I respect people out here who are driving to and from work. I respect the neighbors. And every police officer in this city will be required to do the same. They will be required. It's a mandate for me that when you pick up the phone, the other end is a citizen calling for help. And we have to treat that person with dignity and put ourselves in. I often tell people to reverse it and act the same way you would if you wanted to be pulled over and approached by an officer or a member of your family, if your mother or your father, your sister, brother, you should treat all the citizens the same.
I had the experience when I was waiting in the lobby to come up and see you. A gentleman showed up, asked to speak to a police officer, and he had seen a police car in his neighborhood yesterday. And he wanted to know what was going on. Was there anything that he should be aware of? And he was an older gentleman. And I was really touched by the kind way that the police officer that came out dealt with him. So I wanted to share that because, you know, he made a special trip here to find out, because I'm sure he's concerned what's going on in my neighborhood. And I just wanted to share
that. That's
very
pleasing to me as a police chief. And I'd like to see that repeated dozens of times over and over every day.
Let's talk about, the police crisis negotiating team. I saw that in the news in the past week, and I know that you have a team. I think it's led by women, unless the paper was wrong, but it's about de-escalating situations before they get out of control, including people that may have mental illness that need to be dealt with. They might be causing a disturbance, but they're not criminals per se. They're just experiencing difficulties. Can you talk about that? Because I know there's been so much talk the past year or so.
It's in the infant stage right now. We're looking at producing what we call a right care team. And this would be an expert in mental illness and crisis intervention who rides along with a sworn police officer in a uniform. And when calls are dispatched to officers involving a person who may or may not be experiencing emotional crisis, psychological letdown, this person would be responsible for the first interaction with that subject in a very concerted effort to reduce and minimize the likelihood of any type of physical altercation taking place between the officer and the subject. We are not complete yet. It's in the beginning stages. There are people in the department that have been identified as people who will eventually work on this team. But the main thing is we have to address those crises. And if you look at the use of force around the nation, and you look at the use of deadly force around the nation, a very large proportion of those encounters are with people who are suffering some type of mental trauma. And we hope, and our hope is to identify those type situations and reduce the likelihood of having a force encounter by having that person who's an expert in the mental illness field deal with that person right on the spot.
Right.
Yes.
So police officers don't typically get trained in depth about dealing with mental illness.
I can say that we get training, but there's always, always room for enhancement and always room to build on. But this department is required. The officers do get training in mental...
In mental illness.
Yes.
Besides dealing with situations where you have a mentally ill person that needs assistance, you also have other situations where things can escalate and get out of control, and your crisis negotiating team helps with that also, if you can touch on that.
Yes, we do have a full-time group of people that address issues where you might have a barricaded person, a hostage or whatever. Our SWAT team will respond. Our SWAT team has two negotiators assigned to talk to and try to reduce the likelihood of having an encounter enter with any type of force. And that is led, like you said, by two females. In fact, we had a very good article that recently came out in the news highlighting both of those, both Sergeant Broussard and Sergeant Oaks, who do a very good job at that.
Yeah. I don't know that I could ever be a police officer. I've told Bridget Dugas that. I want to take my hat off. Wayne Griffin is in here with us also. I admire so much people that are willing, not just once in a while, but every day, to suit up and show up at work. And you don't know when you show up for work what the day is going to entail. So this takes some pretty intensive training to keep your cool, right?
It really does.
Yeah.
It's something that I refer to as a calling, because a lot of us could do other things.
Oh,
I've had opportunities to go into private business and make tons of money, but I didn't like the idea. I'm sorry.
You're not getting tons of money here? I didn't look up your salary, so we'll...
I'll be honest.
It's never enough. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, you're correct on that. But we do it because we love people.
I know.
We like solving problems, and we like to make a difference in the community. And that is the core of what a police officer is. And if you find someone who does not espouse or subscribe to those values, they're not going to be a good police officer, because you have to love people.
I know you're interested in the Junior Police Academy to look at recruiting young people to serve. And so if you can talk about that, I know that'll give people an opportunity, young people, to see, is this something I'm meant to do?
Well, I'm very excited about the possibility of that, simply because I wanted to mirror what a lot of professional sports do. Let's look at Major League Baseball. A person in Major League Baseball started in elementary school, what we call T-ball. And then they go to coach pitch. And then they go to junior high school ball and senior high school ball. And then they go to college. And then the minors and then the majors. There are phases. And policing can be just like that. We identify people who are in elementary school, fifth and sixth graders, and we put our hand and our stamp on them, and we mentor them throughout elementary, junior high, high school, into college, and subsequent to that, they graduate or get enough college, they become police officers. And I want to touch that, because I think if you look at today's date, it is February 2nd, 2021. We can go to any fifth, sixth grade class in the city of Lafayette and touch people. And 10 years from now, they're going to be eligible to be Lafayette police officers. And we got to increase that pool. And the Junior Police Academy will do some things that will attract them. A lot of the children that we've encountered in law enforcement, they like to hear the siren or see the red lights, or they love the police horses or the motorcycles that our traffic officers wear, or they love the look of the person in the neatly pressed and starched mm-hmm. uniform. And I think when we can attract those children at an early age and keep them throughout their matriculation through elementary, junior high, and high school, we can do a good job of, so to speak, putting out hooks in them. Mm-hmm. They learn the profession. They like it. They'll be taking classes. They'll be visiting the police department. We'll have police officers of all ranks and ethnicities go out and talk to them. And we'll be teaching them. Of course, we'll get some people that'll say, oh, I want to be a crime scene detective. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the scientific part of it. Others might say, I want to be a detective in robbery. Others might say, well, I want to be a police officer and ride a horse. But we have so much to offer. It's the one job that you can take and have dozens of duties and never have to change jobs because there are so many facets of being a police officer.
Right. You know, I was thinking young men as you were talking, and I really should say young people. Do many young women look at entering the police force? I don't even know what our force here, the percentage of women.
We do have interest from females all around the country. Mm-hmm. The police profession has started some 25 to 30 years ago actively recruit members of the female gender, and it's a need. We have a tremendous need. Early on in the 50s and 60s when we started hiring females as police officers, they would often put them in the youth division to work with the children. Desk jobs, or they'd make jail matrons out of them. Mm-hmm. We quickly learned in our past history that women, females, are very valuable in any facet. Some of your major police departments around this country have been headed by females who were chiefs of police. We've had females who are part of the SWAT team and vice and narcotics. And here, like we said earlier, we have two females who are our top crisis negotiators in any type of situation where our SWAT team has to perform. So there is a major place in policing for members of the female gender.
So with this Junior Police Academy, young people from early on, as you say, like, you know, elementary school, boys and girls,
yes,
can be
definitely
exposed to this as a very good career to pursue. Yes. And I know, going back to Reggie Thomas, he told me that it's so important to recruit to mirror the population, but he said your best police officers come local. They know the neighborhoods. If they've gone to school here, they go to church here, they know people, and they fit right in, and they can be assimilated, and the community will trust them because they know them. So
yes, I agree with that 100%. Mm-hmm. And I can say that the best recruiter in law enforcement, period, regardless of what city or what agency you work for, is a member of that agency. So we have 289 officers, a sworn caliber in the Lafayette Police Department, and they are the best recruiters. If mm-hmm. we could get 289 mm-hmm. people going out recruiting, it'd do wonders for the city. And I think we are going to have people in this police department who realize that, and they will be recruiting people who are in the neighborhoods, who are born and reared here, who understand the city, and who want to offer back.
Are there any initiatives that I didn't ask you about that you'd like to bring up?
Well, I am really big in the community policing, and one of the things I'm working on, and I want the listeners to really be interested in, is we're also going to do a Citizens Police Academy. And the Citizens Police Academy would give the opportunity for people in all walks of life to maybe attend class once a week on a Wednesday or Tuesday, and maybe some weekend, Saturday morning, when there's nothing else in the community going on. And the sole purpose of that is to see how people in policing actually work. We think that when we get a citizen to sit down in a classroom and look at how we investigate crime, how we respond to crime, how we actually prosecute criminals, what it's like to be put in a situation where you may or may not have to use force, it brings us closer to the community, and it also allows the members of the community to fully understand a lot more about what we do on a daily basis. It's a tough job. It's very demanding. It's very challenging, but it is one of the most rewarding things that you can do. Mm-hmm. You save a life. You help someone who's lost get found. You prevent a crime. You solve a crime. You take a criminal off the street. All of those things are rewarding because you're doing them for the good of society.
Right, right. I want to welcome you to our community, and I'm bummed out that the pandemic has kept us from having what would be your first Mardi Gras to experience. So I know there's a lot of culture here that you're probably taking in, though.
Yes, this city is one of the top in the nation for entertainment, for celebrations, for good food, those type things. And that's one of the things I saw when I was attracted to Lafayette is how in-depth those things are. And they make for a very strong community, and they make for a very good family life. Mm-hmm. And the city is at the top in this country when it comes to that.
Well, we're very honored to have you here as our new police chief. So Lafayette City Police Chief Thomas Glover, Sr., look forward to learning more about you and watching you help our police department evolve. It's a wonderful police department, but I know that as you're implementing some of these new initiatives, things are going to get even better. So, and thank you, Wayne Griffin, for being here with us. And
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to thank our listeners. You can go to discoverlafayette.net to hear Chief Glover's interview along with about 185 other interviews, or even better, you can subscribe. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Iberia Bank, which is now a part of First Horizon, Ochsner Lafayette General, and of course, Raider and Jason Sikora, who mixes our tape. Thank you all for making our show possible. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.